No fictional character is more renowned for his powers of thought and observation than Sherlock Holmes, but in his extraordinary intellect, merely a gift of fiction, or can we, you and me, learn to cultivate these abilities ourselves to improve our lives at work and at home? We can, says psychologist and journalist Maria Konnikova, and in her book, Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes, she shows us how. Beginning with the brain attic, Holmes's metaphor for how we store information and organize knowledge, Konnikova unpacks the mental strategies that lead to clearer thinking and deeper insights. Drawing on 21st century neuroscience and psychology, Mastermind explores Holmes's unique methods of ever-present mindfulness, astute observation, and logical deduction. Again, the name of the book is Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. Maria Konnikova writes the literally psyched column for Scientific American and formerly wrote the popular psychology blog Artful Choice for Big Think, and it's a pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
So if I have the story straight, you were read Sherlock Holmes as a very young child while you were living in Russia, and you had a love not only for Sherlock Holmes, but also of what was going on in the brain to allow him to figure all this stuff out.
That is indeed correct. And the stories definitely had a huge impression on me when I was younger. I think they were probably one of the reasons I became interested in psychology, looking back at it, of course.
So in the book, what you want to do is take what we know now and what we know as far as current neuroscience and psychology and figure out what was going on in this mastermind. So what is it about Sherlock Holmes, first of all, do you think, that fascinates us? Because if he were like us, we wouldn't find it as fascinating, right?
That is true, but I think that one of the things that distinguishes Sherlock Holmes from most other fictional detectives is that he is both this Superman, but also an everyman, in the sense that we can actually aspire to be like him. He was based on a real character, Dr. Joseph Bell, and his methods, when you start unpacking them, are remarkably applicable and are something that we can think of doing on our own. So I think that his appeal is based on this, on the one hand, you know, this almost heroic ability to be able to solve any crime, but that's also coupled with the sense of, hey, I could do this too if only I knew how.
Now, the knowing how, so are these skills that all of us possess, or are these things that we have to learn and practice and regularly employ?
I think that we all possess the ability to think like Sherlock Holmes, but I do think that practice and constant practice is absolutely essential. Holmes wouldn't be Holmes if he didn't do something very important, which is keep learning and keep his mind sharp and curious throughout the stories. One of the things that I love about him is that he never is content to just rest on his laurels. All of the cases he takes, all of the ways in which he explores them, he is always trying to learn something new. And I think that's something that we can take from him. We need to keep our mind sharp. We need to keep engaged. We need to stay curious. And we can't just think that, oh, because I understand the principle behind how Sherlock Holmes thinks, I can always apply it. You have to constantly apply it in order for it to work.
You talk in the book about mindfulness and this constant presence of mind and attentiveness. And I was just, as I was reading this and thinking about it, I just thought of, you know, the person on the train who's, you know, looking and then they're checking their email on their phone and they're, you know, looking back. We're not too good at attentiveness anymore, are we?
No, we're not. I think that the modern environment really plays into our propensity for multitasking, which is actually a misnomer because we can't multitask. What we're doing is switching between tasks very rapidly. But our brains are really wired in a way that they like wandering, and it's harder for them to maintain focus on the present moment, and it's much easier for them to kind of wander all over the place. And so that guy on the train who's checking his phone, who's doing all these things, he's not actually really paying attention in the Holmesian sense of paying attention to any of these things. It's the opposite of mindfulness, and I think that it's a problem, and it's something that we need to confront now more than ever.
using the train analogy, how important is it for that gentleman on his phone to know that the guy five seats over sitting next to the window is reading Time magazine from a year ago and is wearing a green check tie?
Well, I think that for this particular man, if he's not Sherlock Holmes, then that's probably not very important. It's probably more important for him to maintain his focus on his phone and to not be looking out the window and doing other things if he's trying to respond to some important work email, because I'm assuming here that this man on the train is on a work commute.
Right.
Which is something that Sherlock Holmes really does teach us as well. You need to know your personal goals. So you don't always want to observe everything around you, because your attention is an incredibly finite resource. So you need to choose and actively choose, to what am I going to pay attention? So for this man, I think, no, you know, I wouldn't care who was sitting two seats, one seat away from me, unless that were somehow personally important to me. So for his finite resources, it would be do better. He would do better to just focus on his email and on just that one email. I hope he's not checking multiple streams all at once, because then, once again, he's not being very mindful.
But you write in the book about knowing yourself and what we're bringing to a situation, and ultimately assessing a scene before we even begin. So going in and having that assessment is important, which would indicate that that is very conscious when you arrive, that you have flipped a switch, if you will.
Yes, I think that's right. I think flipping a switch is a great way of thinking about it, because it's really, it does take a lot of effort and it does take a lot of resources to be in this mindful state. And so, you know, if the switch is constantly on, we are going to get exhausted, and we're not going to be able to be that attentive when it actually matters. So I think it is a conscious decision, you know, when do I flip the switch on and when do I not care as much? When can I just relax and flip it back off? And Holmes has both states as well. He isn't always his ever mindful self. He does have these moments of relaxation where he just goes with the flow and doesn't really care what's going on. Oftentimes he has no idea what the weather is outside.
When it comes to observation, and that would be knowing what the weather is outside, among other things, mm-hmm. but that knowing what the crucial is and what is the incidental. And it seems to me that A, that would be different for every person, and B, would depend on the situation, and I guess ultimately C, we would all look at that differently, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think that that is all correct, that it is incredibly incredibly person-specific, and I would even add a point D. It's also a result of practice. So Holmes wasn't Holmes. He wasn't born Holmes. He had to learn what was important and what wasn't through trial and error. So it's important to realize that he kept trying, and he would get feedback, and so he would learn. He'd know when he was wrong, and he'd know when he was correct, and eventually, by the time we meet him, he's able to tell just in a heartbeat the crucial from the incidental, but that wasn't always the case, and I think that's true of us as well. It's going to take us a while to figure out what is important for us and what we can set aside. It will get easier with time, but it's not going to be a question of just sitting down and making a list and saying, okay, now I know I'm done, especially because, as you pointed out, it is situationally dependent as well. So we do need to adjust depending on the circumstances.
And when you say feedback, that's ultimately where Watson comes in, right?
Yes, I think the role of Watson is crucially important in the Holmes stories. Not only does Watson allow Holmes to talk through everything, which really helps him clarify his logic and see where there are links missing, but he also enables Holmes to get constant feedback, because Watson asks these questions. He keeps pushing Holmes, and Holmes knows that he has to explain it to Watson, and he knows that Watson is ultimately going to chronicle his exploits, so he really wants to make sure that he is learning from what Watson tells him. And by the end of the stories, he really comes to appreciate that Watson is one of those crucial things. He's not incidental, and Watson really helps Holmes be Sherlock Holmes.
You write about this, and I found it fascinating, because it is through this observation that you then set up the place in your mind to basically to play, to have this imagination, to have this creative space where you can reflect and you can explore and you can think about stuff. And to me, that's where the fun is, right? That's where things are batting around of what the possibilities are.
Yes, and I think that you can't overemphasize enough that one of the reasons that Sherlock Holmes is as good as he is because he loves this. You know, his famous exclamation, "The game is afoot." To him, this is fun. It's play, and that helps him stay engaged. That helps him stay motivated. And he is remarkably creative. He's never afraid to just take a step back, to have that space in his mind where he can play around with all the details, make them into things that have never existed in reality, lots of things that probably will never exist. But he tests each scenario out, and he has a lot of fun with it. And I think that in our own lives, we often are a little bit afraid of doing that. We think it's a waste of time. And something that Holmes teaches us is that it's not a waste of time. It's one of the most productive things that we can do.
And even though we have this time to imagine and we have this creativity, that ultimately when it comes to the deduction, when it comes to actually figuring this out, it's based only on what we observe. And you can think and you can play and do all the things you want to do, but when you have when you are actually deducing, when you actually have this art of deduction, this is where you have to rely solely on what you would have observed.
Yes, I think that's right. I think it's important to remember that when you're using this as a process of thought, it's slightly different from the creativity of, say, an artist. I think Richard Feynman, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist, really put it well when he says that it's imagination in a straitjacket. And the straitjacket here is kind of, what did you observe? What is actually real? What is in the world around you? Because our minds really have this incredible propensity to tell stories and to weave together narratives out of events that aren't actually true. But the moment that we create the narrative, we start seeing it as true. And so it is very important. You make an excellent point, too. Once you're done with that play, to take a step back and to say, okay, now where's my straitjacket? I need to make sure that everything conforms to what I've actually seen.
When it comes to modern-day neuroscience, modern-day psychology, what do we know now that we didn't know 159 years ago when Sherlock Holmes hit the scene?
Oh, almost everything. You know, when Sherlock Holmes hit the scene, psychology was in its infancy. Arthur Conan Doyle was a contemporary with William James, who's considered the father of modern psychology. So everything that we know right now was just being born. We were just learning the experimental method. We were just learning about cognitive psychology. You know, Sigmund Freud was cutting edge experimentalist at the time, and today his methods seem laughable because they're so unscientific. And especially when it comes to Holmes, he embodies a lot of these things that we've only recently begun to explore. For instance, the study of mindfulness, the neuroscience of it, to see how it actually changes the brain and what its benefits are on us physiologically, cognitively. This is incredibly new research. You know, in just the last few years, we're seeing what the organization of the brain is looking like and how we can really keep learning and how plastic our brain can be very late into life. That's something we didn't know 20 years ago. We thought, you know, that's it. Once our brain is done growing in our 20s, we're done. So I think we're just learning. Every single day brings something new.
And what is so fascinating as well, so much of this writing and teaching has indeed become aged and has fallen out of favor, Holmes remains relevant and interesting to us.
Yes, I think it's a tribute to Conan Doyle and to Conan Doyle's scientific background and how he created Holmes that he seems to be a hero for every generation. Every generation rediscovers him and recreates him and embraces him anew as the hero of the time. But this happens time and time again.
Maria Konnikova's new book is Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. It is published by Viking. It is endlessly fascinating, an awful lot of fun. Mastermind is the name of the book. Maria, thank you so much for being with us this morning, and best of luck with your work.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.